Now we're holding on page 64 in Shabbos, about the middle of the wide lines. We're in the middle of talking about various practices, various kinds of superstitions, which the Gemara says are Darchei HaModi, the ways of the Goyim, in particular of the Amodim, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, and a Yid is not allowed to have anything to do with them. And then the Gemara has given so far a whole list of them. Although with that said, there are Rishonim, actually, we have the Girsa, that the things that the Gemara is mentioning over here, on the contrary, that the Gemara is saying there's not Darchei HaModi in them, and therefore that some of them, and then therefore that they would in fact be Mutter. We talked about yesterday, for example, the Gemara mentions about Shechting, a rooster that crows like a hen, a rooster that crows like a raven, or that crows in the evening, not at the normal time, or a hen that crows like a rooster, where the Gemara says that would be Darchei HaModi. On the other hand, Savas Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid says you should shecht such a bird, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So how do you reconcile that? So we talked about yesterday, one idea is that it depends whether you're actually saying you're doing it because of that, or whether you're just doing it stam. But another point that some Achronim point out is there is a Girsa that some Rishonim have in our Gemara that says that these things are not Darchei HaModi, and therefore that would also justify what Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid is saying. Anyway, the Gemara continues. The person says, I'm going to drink from this cup, and I'm going to leave some of the cup over, some of the drink in the cup over. Then that's also a problem of Darchei HaModi, because that's a superstitious kind of thing to do. Again, it's also one of those things where either maybe it's not Darchei HaModi according to another Girsa, or also maybe if you don't say explicitly, then it would be fine. And in fact, it does mention in the Zohar the idea of leaving over a little bit of liquid in the cup. Another one, Hamavakas Beitzim Bakoisel, when a woman breaks eggs. Again, it doesn't have a woman, but typically women are the ones who deal with these things. So she breaks eggs against the wall, v'hatoch b'fnei afreichim, or smears them on the wall, both of them in the presence of chicks. So as it's supposed to be some kind of magical or superstitious thing to prevent the chicks from dying, yesh b'midachei emodi, then it's a problem of dachei emodi. Rashi brings another girsa, not mevakas, that she breaks the eggs against the wall, but mekabas, that she takes the shells after the chicks have come out of the shells. She takes those shells and nails them up, or attaches them up to the wall, mekabas, and lashon kava, to fix it in place, as a nichush, as a superstition that the chicks shouldn't die. Then that would be darchei hamod. Also, v'amegis b'fnei afreichim. Also, a person who stirs a pot in front of chicks, I guess the same idea, to keep them from dying. Also, yeshve mishum medavchei hamodi, that's also a problem of mishum medavchei hamodi. That too. Hamerakedes, also, there's other things that people would do. I guess it was a big thing that a person's baby chicks might die, so they would do all kinds of superstitious things to prevent it. So Hamerakedes, a woman who dances, or it can also mean who sifts, or she counts out 71 in front of the chicks, so that the chicks don't die. Also, yeshme mishum darchei hamodi, that's also a problem of darchei hamodi, because again, those are superstitious things that a yid should have nothing to do with. One of the Mephoshim on the Tesefter, we mentioned yesterday that a lot of these things that the Gemara is bringing over here come from two Prokim, the Tesefter, Masechta Shabbos, that deal with various things of Darchei HaModi. One of the Mephoshim there says an interesting point. Why Darchei, where did they ever come up with the idea of 71 having to do with this anyway? And he says, because we find you have 70 Purim that are brought during Sukkot, and the number decreases from day to day, 13 the first day, 12 the second day, etc. So to speak, any number up to 70 involves decreasing. 71 is the lowest number where you don't have that, therefore they came up with this notion of Dafka counting to 71. The Pasha is because the Gemara is for the most part quoting from that Tosefta, and the Tosefta has them as separate halachas. So if you had a really long list like that, then by the end of it, you'd forget what you're talking about, the Pasha. So like this, you have as a handy thing that each of these individual things, you should know yesh b'mishum darchei hamodi. Another one, hamerakedes lekutach, when a woman dances when she's making kutach. Kutach is a dip that's mentioned in various places in Shas. It was basically made out of sour milk and breadcrumbs and salt. So it was kind of like sour cream or feta cheese or something like that. Anyway, there was a notion that when you're making that, you should dance, and that'll make it come out better. v'amishatekes l'adoshim, or on the contrary, when a woman is cooking lentils and she tells everybody to be quiet, and there was an idea that that would make them cook better. V'amitzavachas l'grisin, or when she's making split peas, on the contrary, she yells out and she tells other people to. Also, yesh v'mishim davke hamerdi, all of those are davke hamerdi. Here you have three of them grouped together, pashtus, so they all do with food preparation. Grisin are split peas. So there's a difference between lentils, where they had the notion that being quiet is good for them, versus split peas, where there was the idea that we do fine to a certain extent. You know, we say every day in davening, that speaking is good when you're grinding spices. And Gemara mentions in that context that the reverse is true when you're drawing wine out of a barrel, then it's better to be quiet. You know, the Gemara in fact mentions that when a person would, when the Bais Mikdash would be buying wine from a vendor, when the gizbar noticed that dregs are starting to come out with the wine, instead of saying anything, he would tap with a stick to motion to the guy to stop pouring. So there is that concept that sometimes certain kinds of foods, that speech or the lack of it is good for them, but these particular ones that it's saying over here, at least according to the gizbar that we have, are doubtful. Another one, Hamashtenes Bifnei Kedei Rosa Kedesh Tispash Mahera, a woman who urinates in front of her pot of food so that it should cook quickly. Also, Yesh Mevishim Dachei Amuri, that's also Dachei Amuri, because obviously there's no logical connection between doing that and the food cooking faster. Toner Rabbanon, Avol, however, on the other hand, if you want to speed up the cooking, using ways that don't seem to be so obviously, that don't seem to have an obvious cause and effect, but nevertheless they do, and therefore they are mutter, noisim kesim shel tus. You're allowed to put a piece of mulberry wood into the pot, the shivres chukas, or pieces of broken glass, the kedera, into the pot of food, kedesh dispash mehera, so it cooks quickly. Those actually have an actual cause and effect. It's not just a nichush. In the case of the mulberry wood, Rashi explains, it's very sharp, like vinegar, so therefore it makes the food cook faster. He doesn't say what the glass is, but maybe it absorbs some of the heat or something, or spreads out some of the heat. But the Chum say that's true as far as the glass is not after Hamuri, but there's a different problem. The shiver is kuchas nesakana, because of the danger a person might end up swallowing a shard of glass. Then we learn in a braise. So here's another thing that you're allowed to do, even though it, on the face of it, it seems like Dauke HaMurdi, but it's not, because there is an actual logical basis to it. Noisin bul shal melach l'seichaner, you're allowed to put a chunk of salt into a lamp, into an oil lamp, the shirosh tor the tablet, so that it burns more cleanly. And the idea is, it's not nifush, it actually helps, it actually explains, the logic is, the salt actually has an effect on the oil, clarifies the oil, and therefore the oil gets drawn into the wick better, and therefore it's mutter.
What's nifush magic?
Nifush is superstition. So not so much magic, but superstition.
Hocus pocus.
Yeah. There is the actual braisa that this comes from actually mentions it in a different context, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, is that you're allowed to do that before Shabbos. And there's no concern that maybe you're causing extra burning on Shabbos, and maybe the salt itself may catch on fire or something. There's no problem with it, because on the contrary, it makes the oil flow better, and that way you have a nicer Shabbos lamb. V'noisin tit v'chaus is tachas aner. Similarly, you're allowed to put clay or crushed brick, or chaus can be crushed brick or crushed earthenware, under the lamp, vishvosha tamtin v'tadlik, so that it cools off and it'll burn better. The idea being those things absorb heat, and therefore that cools off the oil, and therefore it doesn't evaporate and burn as fast. So those are not dalche hamuri, because those have an actual logical basis to them. Omer Mazutra, so Mazutra mentions in this connection, not directly in connection with Dauche HaMurdi, but since we're mentioning things that when it comes to lighting lamps to make them burn longer or whatever, so the flip side is also true. Haiman de Machasi Shraga de Mishra, if a person covers up an oil lamp where there that causes the oil to burn faster, or Magali Nefta, or he has a lamp that's lit with neft, which is in English, it's called naphtha, similar to turpentine or kerosene or other such things. That kind of thing. Rashi points out earlier in the Masechta, it mentions that stuff is very volatile. It catches on fire very easily. So what happens is, if you keep the reservoir of neft uncovered, what happens is the fire ends up jumping to that as well. It doesn't just burn on the wick. It also ends up burning inside the actual reservoir of neft. So then, Ka'avim Mishum Baltashvis, so a person does that, he's over on either of those things. He's over on Baltashvis because he's causing the oil to get used up faster and therefore wasting it. Okay. One more thing about Dalfe HaMuri, or the lack of it. Amra V'chayim Kum Rabbanon, to say the following toast, the following thing as V'chayim, Amra V'chayim, wine and life, L'Kum Rabbanon, to the mouths of the Chachamim, Ein B'Mishum Dalfe HaMuri, that's not Dalfe HaMuri, that's just saying it as a brach. And in fact, Maisa Rabbi Akiva, Sha'os and Mishnah would know, it happened that Rabbi Akiva once made a wedding for his son, Ba'al Kos for Kos Shehevi, and every cup that he was bringing to serve to the Chachamim, Omra, he was saying the following toast, Chacham Rabbi Chayev Kum Rabbanon, wine and life to the mouths of the Chachamim, Chayev Chacham Rabbi Kum Rabbanon, Lepum Tamidehon, life and wine for the mouths of the Chachamim and the mouths of their Talmidim. Now, why in the first one is he not mentioning the Talmidim, and why in the second one is he reversing the order, putting the Chayeh before Chamra? So Marashah brings like this. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra that tells how the Romans, it says, had written on one of their city gates, maybe if it was on their city gates or whatever, in their writings or whatever, the head of everything that brings life is wine. Actually, Gemara goes on to say there that Rabbanah met up with them and said that's not really correct, and the right way you should say it is that wine is the chief medicine. But the original version was that wine is the chief thing for life. So now, when is that? Marashah says, only if you drink it in the proper amount, not if a person drinks it too much. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is first saying to the Chachamim, before he speaks to the Talmidim, he's saying, Chacham Rabbi Chaye, wine and life. If you drink according to the right amount, then that'll bring you life. And he's telling them, even if you do end up drinking a little bit extra, you should still have chayim, Hashem should still bench you with life, and you shouldn't have the bad consequences of it. Then he continues, chayim v'chamra, he's saying that they should continue to be chayim v'chayomim, they should continue to be living and healthy as before they drank the wine. So he mentions the Talmidim, because Talmidim often tend to overindulge, because they're not yet old enough to realize that they should hold themselves back. There's a reason why, for example, one of the reasons why, you know, there's a famous thing that ever made about the four kelishvach only up to age 40, because by the time a person is 40, you would expect that he knows how to control himself anyway. So that would be why the first time he doesn't mention the Talmideha, and only the second time, because the second time he's mentioning to them first that they need to have the chayim before the wine, that they should be careful, the Talmidim in particular have to be careful not to overindulge. A couple of other Mephoshim, Ben Yehoyada and Pesher Agadza talk about various other ideas about it, that it's more along the lines of that we find it, we know Nichnas Yayin Yotzah Soid, but the Talmudim have to be careful not to speak up in the presence of their Rebbeim without being given permission. Therefore, he mentions the wine and then the life first for the Rabbanan. Meanwhile, for the Talmudim, he starts with the life first and only then the wine. Others, be careful about the wine, because then it's going to lead you to speak in front of your Rebbeim in a way that you shouldn't be doing. Klau Godor Perek Shvi. The Perek begins by talking about the dinim of under what circumstances, if a person breaks Shabbos, under what circumstances he bring only one chatas for all of the Shabbos that he broke, versus one chatas separately for each Shabbos, versus one chatas separately for each Malacha. And then after that, the next Mishnah goes on and lists the 39 Ovis Malachas, and then the rest of the Perek starts listing details about basic concepts about the Malachas and things if a person carries out a certain thing on Shabbos. What's the minimum to be chayim? So in the course of discussing, so the Gemara discusses the point that you could have a person who never knew about Shabbos in the first place, the Tinnik Shanishva. So in that connection, the Gemara brings a related idea where a person doesn't know that it's Shabbos because he lost track of the days. So Omer Abuna, Hoy Mahalach Baderech Oy Bamidbar, if a person is traveling on the road or in the desert, the En Yadeh Emesai Shabbos, he doesn't know when Shabbos is, what he has to do is he has to count 6 days from when he realized that he lost track. So the day that he realizes that becomes in effect his Sunday, and the next day becomes his Monday, and so forth. And then he keeps the seventh day as Shabbos. There's a few places in Sichas where the Rebbe brings an interesting point that the Radvaz says that that for such a person, that day that he keeps his Shabbos actually becomes Shabbos Daraisa for him. The Gemara goes on to mention details about it that are not here in Ein Yaakov. For example, each day he can only do malacha only enough to live for that day, because what if today is in fact, what if today is Shabbos and the next day is not, and then he's doing malacha unnecessarily on Shabbos. But on the other hand, he's allowed to walk as far as he wants or do other things to get himself out of the situation, so he doesn't have to be in the situation forever. So he's allowed to walk even many parsois. And there's a short simon in Shulchan Aruch, simon shin dalad mem in Aruch Chaim, that discusses these given. Anyway, Chiyah bar Rav Omer. Chiyah bar Rav says the other way. We had Meshama Yom Echad Umo Neshishi Yomim. First, he should keep the one day Shabbos. And then after that, he counts the next 6 days are the weekdays. So actually, to be exact, Rashi says, according to Chiyah bar Rav, the day that he realized that he lost track, he may have already done malacha earlier that day. Therefore, he doesn't make that day his Shabbos. The next day becomes his Shabbos. So the Gemara says, "B'mai k'mitzvah." What's the underlying machlokas? Mar savak b'riyasa shalolam. Rav Huna holds that you go according to the way the world was created. First there were 6 weekdays, and then there was Shabbos. Therefore, this person should be doing the same kind of thing. Mar savak ha'odemarishin. Whereas Chiyah bar Rav holds you should follow the example of odemarishin. He was created on Friday and then went straight into Shabbos. So even though he was created on Friday, but that day itself already he was created late enough in the day that it already had a connection to Shabbos. There is an interesting thing. There's a famous long story that the Friedrich Rebbe wrote in a letter to our Rebbe and to the Rebbetzin, telling a whole long arichos about a couple of old friends who eventually all became chassidim of the Baal Shem Tov. It's a very, very long story. Currently, I think parts of it are being serialized in the weekly Chayenus. Anyway. So in the course of that, he mentions over there that one of these friends, Reb Mordechai, mentions over there a Torah that he heard from the Baal Shem Tov on this Gemara over here about Avodas HaTorah versus Avodas HaTfilah. So a person is lost in the weekdays are connected more with Avodas HaTorah. Shabbos is connected more with Avodas HaTfilah. So when a person realizes that he's lost track, and he doesn't know his way to Avodas HaTfilah, so the proper way, so you have the Machlokas. Reb Huna is saying, first he has to have the 6 days of, of Avoida, and then he'll be able to come to Avodas HaTfilah properly, whereas Chiyah bar Rav is saying the other way around. Chiyah represents where a person has chayus in learning, so therefore he already has that, so therefore he can right away start with the Shabbos, and only then go on to the rest of the weekday Avoida. Further on in the parak, again, it lists the 39 Ovis Malachas, and the Gemara starts going through details of some of them. So one of them is the Malacha of Borer, and the Gemara deals with the details of what exactly is and isn't considered Borer. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Ki Osir of Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he told over that one time in Eretz Yisrael, Shabbos of Rav Bibi Havori, one time it was the Shabbos of Rav Bibi, which Rashi says means it was his turn to be serving the Talmidim. By the way, we mentioned before, the Shalach Kodesh says the name is not supposed to be pronounced Bibi, he says it's supposed to be pronounced Bevi, which is a name that we find in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah. Anyway. So whatever, it was his turn to serve the food. The Iklu, Rab Ami, Rab Asi. Rab Ami and Rab Asi were present over there when he was serving the food. Shoda Kamayo Kalkola de Peri, he poured out in front of them a basket of fruit with the fruit mixed in with the leaves. Now, the lawyer Dinah, sort of Dimi says, I don't know why he did it that way. Is it that he holds that picking out the food from among the waste would be osir, and therefore he couldn't pick out the fruit and serve them only the fruit and leave the leaves behind in the basket? Which Tosfos actually points out that would mean if he's doing it for la'achas man, if you're doing it right away to eat it right away on the spot, then everybody agrees it's mutter. There'd be no question that Rabbi Bibi wasn't concerned about that. But what we're talking about is it osir to do it for later, where in fact the halacha is that it is. Or is it just because he wanted to serve them generously? He wanted to have a big pile in front of them, so it should look like a generous amount is being served.
I didn't get it. He's picking out the fruit from the other stuff. The fruit is the ochel, and the other stuff is the
fruit. That's the point. Is it that he holds that ochel the tech service? You are allowed to do that, but only if you're doing it to eat right away, not if you're doing it for later on. So that's Tosfos points out that when Rav Dimi is saying, I'm not sure what Rav Bibi held, it must be, since everybody agrees that it's mutter, if you're doing it for right away, when you're taking Oichel Matev Psoilus, then it must be that he's saying like this, he's putting it on the table, but they're not necessarily going to be eating it right away, and therefore the question is, did he in fact hold that it's also where in fact the halacha is, it is also. Then Yehoyada has a bit of a different explanation of the story. He says it doesn't mean that it was Rav Bibi was serving the Talmidim. It means that he was hosting them for a kiddush or a Shabbos meal or something. Further on, among the malachas, among the 39 malachas are tying and untying, koshav amater. So the last shir of a Mishkan hechavoy. Where do you have tying in the Mishkan? Amar Rava shakin koshim bi sedes olim. So Rava says that when they had the Mishkan had pegs, the Yistos of Mishkan that I mentioned a few places in the Pesukim. So you had pegs that were attached to the edges of the curtains and also to the poles themselves. They would stick them. Rashi mentions at the end of Parashas Truma, he says, I'm not sure based on the description in the Pesukim whether it means that they actually stuck them into the ground or whether it just means that they were heavy and they held things down with their weight. He says, since they're called Yistos, which means pegs, Mastama, they were stuck into the ground. Anyway, the point is, they had ropes tied to them, where the idea is that those pegs help keep everything in place, help keep the curtains from flapping around and whatever.
Secure with the pegs.
Yeah, so Rava says, and that's the point, is they would tie ropes to the pegs when they're setting up the Mishkan. Amalei Abaye, but Abaye says Koshvim. How can you call that tying of a kind that should be Osir Midaraisa on Shabbos? How Keshra Manas Lahatiru? That's the kind of tying which eventually is going to be meant to be untied. Midaraisa, the kind of knot that's Osir on Shabbos, is only when it's a professional knot and one that's never meant to be untied. If you eventually mean to untie it, then it's also only Dirabon. And if we learn all the malachas from the Mishkan, then it has to be. We have to find some way where you tie something permanently. Now, the Yerushalmi actually deals with that. The Rebbe mentions this briefly in a sicha, and mentions the Yerushalmi actually takes the view that it doesn't matter. Anytime they set up the Mishkan, even though it may only be for overnight, as we know from the Pesukim and Parshas Baal Oysa, it could conceivably happen that they come to a place, and then the next morning the Onon is already leaving, and it's time for them to go. Nevertheless, any place where they camp is considered, because it's Alpi Hashem Yachnu, Alpi Hashem Yiso, any place that they are is considered like it's permanent. So, and therefore, that would be, however, the Bavli over here, Abaya, is obviously not liking that answer. So, Ella Amar Abaya, Shekain Urge Yurius Shenifsa Kohem Nima, because what happens is when they're weaving the curtains, if a thread breaks, Koshrinosa, then they would tie the broken ends together. You have to consider how a loom is set up to weave. You have the chassis threads that are passed through two frames with loops in them to be able to raise and lower the even numbered ones and then the odd numbered ones and be able to weave back and forth. So if one of those chassis threads tears, then you don't want to have to take it out and replace it with a whole new one, especially if you've already started weaving the fourth. So you would tie the two broken ends together. So Omale Rava Tiratza Kosher. So Rava said, okay, well, that explains the tying. Matu Ma'ikla Memer. Where would you ever have in a scenario like that where you're untying? V'chi Tema. So you might answer, Di Misrami Le Tre Chutri Kishri Bahadi Adori. What if it happens that you happen to have two threads like that, one next to the other, two chassis threads that broke like that, and you're going to tie both of them, and you're going to say that's no good because then it sticks out of the cloth too much. So therefore, shari chad the kotir chad. Therefore, you're going to untie one and leave the other one tied. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos actually a couple of blocks earlier argues with that because the word kotir chad implies that you're actually tying something, not just that you're leaving it tied. So Tosfos has a bit of a different explanation. You could have a scenario, let's say, where a thread broke in two places and you would tie, and at first you're putting in another piece to make up for the missing piece. So you tie it at both ends, but then later on you'd untie one of them and tie the other and do it that way. The problem with that is Hashtalaf name Malach Basavadam in Osim Kane. You wouldn't even do that in front of a human king because when you untie that thread, so if you have like that, let's say like Rashi, that you have two threads next to one another that had to be knotted, the problem is that the threads for the Urias were very thick. We know that they were, there were six ply, there were six ply threads. Actually, there were six plies each of Tchela, Sargoman, Talas, Shani, and Sheish. Altogether, the entire thread was 24 ply. So that makes a very thick thread, and that means that if you have a place like that where you had, there was going to be a knot, and then you untie it, then you can have a big hole over there. So even in front of a bust of a dumb, if you make curtains for him, you wouldn't make them like that because it wouldn't look good. Would you do that in front of Hashem? No. If you have something like that, if you have a problem like that, two threads, one next to the other that broke, what you would do is you would never, to begin with, have two of them knotted next to the other, one next to the other. What you do is one of them would be knotted over here, and the other one you would cut off the thread in other places and knot in and then tie in a replacement thread in other places so that you never have in the first place two knots like that, one next to the other. So the point is, in other words, you don't really have untying over there, because you're not untying. You would cut away that area, and you'd knot in a new thread. So that doesn't work there. Where do you have matzil? Ella Amar Rava became a Rabbi Loi. She takes sadi chilazim kosher matzirim. The people who are trapping the chilazim, they use nets for it. So nets involve a lot of knots all over the place. Sometimes you'd need to take a piece of a net off of a piece of netting off of one and put it on and attach it to another one to fill in a hole where it ripped or whatever it is exactly. So therefore you do have tying and untying, and each time when they're tying it or when they're untying it, it's meant to stay permanently that way. And therefore that would be the Malacha Daraisa of kosher and matir. The Habona at the bottom of the page says that it also represents how closely the Shechina and the Jewish people are connected. So therefore, this whole thing about kosher and matzah also symbolizes how careful we have to keep, and how careful we have to make sure to act in a way that will keep that connection a permanent one. Further on, again, the Gemara goes on to talk about various other malachas, one of them being the malacha of sewing. So, Omer of Zutra Batovia Omerab, Hamaseach Chut Shal Tfira B'Shabbos, if a person stretches out the sewing thread on Shabbos, Chayev Chatos, then it would be Chayev Chatos for that, because that's a malacha. What are we talking about? So Rashi says we're talking about, you have a garment has already been sewn together, but over time the stitches have come loose. So now the different parts of cloth that make up the garment have now separated. So what do? You pull on that thread in order to tighten them up and then bring them back together. So that's part of the malacha of sewing. So therefore, a person would be chayav for that. The Rambam has a different understanding of it. He says we're talking about, to begin with, when a person is starting to sew and he stretches out the thread so that it'll go smoothly into the fabric, then that's part of the malacha of sewing. Anyway, Rav Zutra Bar Tovia also says, by the way, two other things that are not directly related to that, Rashi explains, he learned them all three together from Rav, and therefore he learned them and therefore he repeated them all together, even though they don't directly have one to do with the other. So the second thing he says is, if a person learns even one single thing from an ambush, which the Gemara is going to describe in a couple of lines what it is, so a person is chayev misa for learning from such a person. And the third one is, if a person knows how to calculate tkufas mazolus, he knows how to calculate the seasons and when each mazol is visible and so forth, which Rashi explains further on, among other things, you can use that to help forecast what the weather is going to be. So a person knows how to do that and doesn't do it, also the Sapper Hemenu, you're not allowed to talk with such a person because by not engaging in that kind of calculations, he's taking away some of the glory of Hashem. Like this, a person could use that knowledge to as the Gemara is going to say soon, to make that even the Goyim will respect the Yidin. It also means the person himself will realize how exquisitely everything is put together by Hashem, and then come to greater Ava and Yira of Hashem. That Amma makes a similar point in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, that he describes that a person learns about these kinds of things, about Maisa Merkava and Maisa Bereishis. It brings them to an Ava and a Yira of Eveshter. So therefore, a person doesn't do it, then you shouldn't talk with such a person. So what is the definition of megushta or amgusha? We said a person learns something from an amgush, he's chayiv misa. Tosfos brings that also, so Rashi says it's actually not just in reference to this one statement that we said, haloi medavar echem in an ambush. Rashi says in general, in a number of places in Shas, we have mention of somebody called, of a character called an amgusha. What exactly are they and what is wrong with them? Tosfos brings from the Oruch a different explanation. Specifically, the Gemara tells us in Morid Cotton that Paroi from Moshe Rabbeinu's times was an amgushi. And it says he would go out to the river. And therefore, Hashem tells Moshe, go meet him over there and tell him about Makas Dam and so forth. So then the question would be, what was the big problem with him? What was he going to the river for? What did he hope to accomplish? So Rab and Shmuel argued. One of them says that an amgushi is a person who practices magic. And the other one says Gedufi is somebody who blasphemes and then speaks disrespectfully about Hashem. So Rashi describes he's very fanatical about his avodah zarah, and he's always blaspheming and talking chutzpah against Hashem and trying to convince people to join his religion and join his avodah zarah. So then the second opinion is saying that's what an amgusha is. Historically, you have the Persian galochim were called, and in the Persian language, they were called magus. Yeah, that word in English also. Eventually, the word magic also comes from it in English. And amgusha is a variant of that word. You can find something about it actually in this week's Chayenu in the article of Rav Levi Yitzchak Soder. There's actually something over there that also talks about an amgusha after whom a chamber in the Beis Mikdash was named. Anyway, an amgusha. So we're saying one of these Persian galochim, or one of these amgushas that we're mentioning in various places in Shas, is the primary problem with him that he does black magic, or is the primary problem with him that he blasphemes Hashem and tries to convince people to avodah zarah? Now, so we said Rav and Shmuel, one of them says this, one of them says that. Which one said which? Tistayim, we can conclude that Rav Omer Gedufi, that Rav is the one who says that the problem with the Amgusha is that he blasphemes Hashem. The Omer Rav Zutra Vatruvia, Omer Rav, because we just said that Rav Zutra Vatruvia said in Rav's name, that you learn, even the person learns even one thing from an ambush, he's Chayiv Misa. So now you have to realize that he's talking about a Chaushi. If you're going to say the only problem with the ambush is that he's a magician, then what's the problem? But Oksiv was so much lasses. The Pasuk says you're not allowed to learn magic in order to actually practice it. Avot the lamed lahovin lahoris, but you are allowed to learn it in order to understand how it works, or in order to teach others. So, for example, Rashi says a Nabi Sheker comes and does something, you'll be able to realize that it was done by black magic. Or Ulahodus, or to teach others what's Osir and what's Mutter, as we find examples in Gemara Sanhedrin, where Rabbi Eliezer and other Chachamim taught their Talmidim such things. So therefore, if the problem with an Amgusha was only that he was a magician, there wouldn't be in and of itself a problem in learning from him, because you could learn from him the magic, not in order to practice it, but in order to Lahovin Ulahodus. So therefore, Tisayim, that shows, therefore, that Rav is saying the problem with the Amgusha is not just that he's a magician, but that he blasphemes Hashem. You want to stay far away from such a person. Anything he says, Rashi says, is going to be minus, and you want to stay away from him so he doesn't start having an effect on you. So Tosfos again mentions that according to the Oruch's explanation, the question is, what was Paro doing by the river? Was he trying to do kishuf, or was he blaspheming Hashem and saying, as a famous expression in the pasuk, Yo'ur Livani Asisini, the river is mine, and I made myself, and I made the river, etc. Okay. We mentioned about this point, a person who knows how to calculate Kufus and Mazolus and doesn't. So more on that topic. Amr of Shim ben Pazi, Amr of Shim ben Levi, Mishim bar Kabara. Kola yadeh lachashiv, but Kufus and Mazolus. Ve'ene choshiv, a person who knows how to calculate Kufus and Mazolus, but he doesn't do that. And that way, for example, as Rashi points out further on, and Marsha points out over here, it means therefore that he fails to know and to inform people when it's going to be rainy, when it's going to be hot, etc. So then, so all of our Kosev Omer, the Pasuk says on him a criticism that the Espoil Hashem lo yabitu, they're not looking at the works of Hashem, or Maisa Yadav lo ro, and they're not seeing the things that Hashem made. So in other words, the idea is when a person knows how to calculate these things, then like this, you can have, now Shaw explains, there's what a person sees with his eyes, and there's also what a person calculates with his brain. So now this person is lacking in both of those. But there's the idea also again that it means that he's not looking at the great works of Hashem, and instead he's pretending as though they're unimportant. Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer of Yonason, minayin shem mitzvah al adam v'chashet tkufas mazolis. How do we know that there is in fact a mitzvah on a person if he's able to calculate tkufas mazolis? Shenema, the pasuk says, shmartim v'asisem, you should guard the Torah and you should do it. Kihi chochmaskem v'vinaskem la'enei amim, because it is your wisdom and your understanding in the eyes of the nations. So, ezui chochmo v'nishi la'enei amim, what kind of understanding of these things would be noticeable in the presence of the goyim? Because after all, the Chochmah of Torah, they're not familiar with, Heviyem is a Chishuv Tkufas HaMazolis, that would be calculating these kinds of things, because again, Rashi says this way, for example, you're able to say, this year will be rainy, or this year will be sunny, or whatever, and it comes true, and therefore that makes people realize that we Jews know what we're talking about. That's why we say that's La'ene Ha'amin. With that said, you know, I mean, there is, all of this is not meant to be at the expense of regular learning Torah. You know, Yad Altadeva mentions in Perek Ches at Tanya the idea that learning Chochmas Chatzodius can be very dangerous unless a person knows, like the Rambam and the Ramban, how to use them properly. There's in fact actually a letter from the Rebbe in the back of one of the Chalokim, the Likud Besichas, I don't remember now which one, where he goes through, like, there are six different ways in which a person could be using Chochmas Chatzodius in an appropriate way. You have, you know, Pashit, for example, a person needs it to make a living, or you have, for example, that he uses it in order, or for example, you could have, he doesn't even learn from Goyish books themselves, he derives them all from within the Torah, like we have, for example, the famous story where Rabbi Yeshua derives from Sukkim how long a snake is pregnant, and other such things like that, and you have various other kinds of examples like that, and then you have the example where a person does actually go and delve into the Goyish books on the subject, but he's doing it because he knows he has the ability to use that for Kedusha, and the Altar Rebbe brings over there in Tanya, for example, the Rambam and the Ramban who did just that.
Snake is 7 years before it gives birth.
Yeah, that's Rabbi Shor says that over there. Yeah. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ogoma, Dalad here. La'osid Lavoi, in Eretz Yisrael, there will be Jews from all the generations, including the 10 lost Shvatim. So that I've talked about, even after the land of Eretz Yisrael was conquered in Yeshua's times, you didn't always have a time of Kol Yeshveh Aleh. You had a certain amount of time in history when there was that all Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael, but not always. Eventually Shvatim went into Golos and that stopped, etc. La'osid Lavoi, though, it will be Kol Yeshveh Aleh. Because first of all, you'll have the Aseret Shvatim who were taken into Golus beyond Nahar Sambatian. They were going to come back, as in fact, we find Psukim in Yechezkel and in various other places that demonstrate that. They're going to be members of all 12 Shvatim there. Besides that also, there's going to be Bnei Yisrael from all the generations. So you'll have the Kol Yeshvel, you'll also have the complete Aleha, because you're going to have the whole 10 lands, or the lands of all the 10 nations, including the Keni, Knizi, and Kadmoni, so then you'll have much more of a Kol Yeshvel Aleha, literally Kol, than you ever had before. Continuing on Halachas of Shech Yonu and Atov V'Ametiv and the related Brachas, if a person's father or some other relative passes away, or even not a relative, but there's an Adam Kosher, or the Alter Rebbe phrases it differently, somebody where you feel tsar because you love him and now he passed away, or all the more so if he's a Talmud Chacham, then you say the Baruch HaDayanemes. For any other person where you don't feel so bad, then you say also say Dayanemes, but without shame and malchus. If the father left him an estate to inherit, then also after saying Baruch HaDayanemes with shame and malchus, he also says Shech Yonu. And if he has brothers as well who are going to be inheriting together with him, then instead it's Hatov V'Ametiv, because the usual rule when you have something that benefits yourself and somebody else, that it's Hatov V'Ametiv. Another din, when a person builds a house or buys important kalim or important clothing, even if he had similar to them before, but these particular ones never belonged to him, and he's happy with them, then he says Shech Yonu. The Akhenev actually says that for other kinds of clay tashmish, even gold and silver, the minhag is not to make the bracha at all, only on clothing. So you make the bracha when you buy them or when you finish building, even though you haven't used them yet. So clothing you often have. I mean, clothing is much more is much cheaper and much easier to get nowadays. So I think to the extent people do it for clothing is only for like something really important, like a new suit or something, not just like a new shirt or pair of pants or something. The Altadeva brings though, let's say you bought a garment and it hasn't been sewn yet and you're supposed to take it to the tailor to sew, or I guess maybe the same thing would apply, let's say, to a suit where you need to get it hemmed. So yeshayim, you don't make the bracha when you buy it, only after you first wear it. Anyway, the point is the bracha is for the simchas halev. You're happy that you bought them. That's why you say it then, rather than waiting until you actually wear them. When you actually put it on, you say the bracha, malvish arumim, the Altadeva adds without shame malchus. Now,
after you wear it the first time.
When you wear it the first time, you say Malvish Arum. When you bought it, you say Shechianu. Now, when you're wearing it the first time, you say Malvish Arum. But the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch adds that if you made already the Bracha Malvish Arum in the morning in Birkas HaShachar, and now you're putting this one on for the first time later on in the day. If you're putting it on for the first time in the morning, then you can be Yotze with the Bracha Malvish Arum. And in fact, the Alter Rebbe says it's best to do it that way. Yesh omrim that when you're buying a hat, then you say Otu Yisrael the Sifara when you put it on the first time, and a belt Ozi Yisrael the Gvura. Others disagree. Therefore, the better thing is again put them on first thing in the morning, and have in mind that to pass to them with those brachas. If you put them on later, then the Alter Rebbe says say it without shame or malchus.
Even though the belt is not so kosher,
so again, maybe nowadays that a belt is not so kosher, you can buy them for $10 in the store is different. One more, if a person buys a talis shal mitzvah, then after he puts the tzitzis on it, then he says shechianu. If not, then he says the bracha when he first puts it on. Then he says shechianu when he first puts it on. After the isat of the tzitzis, although after that, actually says the order should be the other way around. First, he should say the shechianu, then the isat of the tzitzis.